Would you consider your patient base to be women your mother warned you about?
You bet. Absolutely. And that's why I got to be real careful, because my mother was usually right. And these women are a little crazy. They're a little dramatic, but I still operate on them because I think I'm probably a little crazy and maybe a little dramatic too sometimes.
Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes business sexy again.
I'm Gina Tremarco, sales trainer and consultant at Pivot 10 Results and founder of Carolina Improv.
And I'm Rachel Pitts, a mommy, wifey, and mortgage loan officer with U.S. Mortgage.
And there's a man in the room again.
Hi, ladies.
Keith. Hi, Keith.
So nice to be here with you today.
We miss you, Keith. We're always so excited when you're here. And who would have thought that you would have showed up for a show about boobs?
Who would have thought?
Who would have thunk it? What an awesome, thorough understanding of boob jobs, specifically Rachel's boob job.
It's always good to know about Rachel's boobs.
Well, now everybody's about to know about my boobs, honestly.
Your boobs do look amazing. Every time I see them, I feel like reaching out and just seeing what they feel
well,
like.
Well, you can feel them the next time.
Did I just say that? I did.
Does that extend to everybody?
Well, I'll let you ask my husband, but I do have, it's funny, there's a lot of my girlfriends that just walk up and they ask me to be, Gina, you did feel my boobs.
Not since the boob chop.
I thought
that was a
did.
Before feel.
Oh, was it? Okay.
No.
Anyways.
No. Yeah, I felt you up before, but I haven't felt you, I haven't touched you since.
You
the
just
boob
don't
job.
Remember it. Mm-hmm. But
no, I would have remembered. But anyway,
you did. Standing in the lobby of Legends in concert, you squeezed him with Jay.
Oh,
did you get one and Jay got the other? Wait, I don't, it's like,
so anyhow, you can squeeze them because I've got other girlfriends that just walk up and they're like, do you mind if I feel them? And I'm like, sure, because I mean, it is true. It's sort of like it's different because it's an addition to my body. So I don't know. There's just something about it. You'd have to get a boob job to understand that it's not a big deal to have somebody come up and feel them because they're plastic, if you will.
And in case you haven't guessed, the show is about Rachel's boobs.
Yes, we're talking with Dr. White, who was my plastic surgeon, is my plastic surgeon. He is board certified plastic surgeon by the American Board of Plastic Surgery, American Board of Surgery, and a member of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons and the Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons. All the things. He's also a contributing expert to the popular book, Be Your Best, which is a comprehensive guide to aesthetic plastic surgery. And he's an all-around awesome dude and wonderful surgeon. You'll hear in this episode, he has a decorated military history and just 35 years of looking at naked chicks and making them even better than they were.
And he's got a great sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
He does. And I could see how he would instill a level of comfort and confidence in a patient.
Yeah.
I mean, he has that, you know, he mentioned, and he made a great point, most doctors don't have personalities, but he does have what would seem like great bedside, tableside, breastside manner.
Absolutely. He does. And he made me feel super comfortable. And I think that's really important for, you know, even the most confident woman, which I'm pretty confident, I still went into the whole thing feeling a little bit uncertain, and he made me feel very comfortable, and his great staff.
I got to tell you, I felt like getting a boob job just listening to him, and I don't need one. I was like, maybe should I get a reduction?
He has other services, you know, there's all kinds of things going on.
I'm going to go to the website and see what the other services we can get. Because I am rolling in the dough right now. I feel like
thanks to the government, you can go and get do your stimulus check is not meant to pay for plastic surgery.
Come on!
I thought that was an essential business.
Hey, feeling good. That's the theme of this. That's what kind of we hit on is feeling good about yourself and having swagger and confidence is gonna can do no wrong in your business. So let's learn from Dr. White on this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About.
Hello, Dr. White. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're all hanging in there with this COVID-19 thing, but spirits are still up, so that's a good thing.
Yes. Are you guys still open and doing business right now, or are you closed down?
Well, we have to be because we're a certified surgery center, so we still have to are doing cancer surgery and wounds and things like that. But as far as her major surgery is concerned, like cosmetic, it's been put down on the in the back burner right now.
Gotcha. Well, I am a patient of Dr. White, and I had a really great experience. And Jean and I talked about that in our intro. Dr. White, we do a little intro and tell your bio at that time, so we didn't waste your time on talking about that. But I had a fantastic experience with Dr. White and his staff. And the really big question I want to start with, that I'm sure a lot of people don't know, is you have a super highly decorated military career. One of the examination rooms is just filled with all this, all your awards and decorations. And so tell me, how did you go from a military career to get into plastic surgery?
Well, you know, my life is kind of all broken up in segments, some good, some bad. I grew up in California in a broken family. And then I, not to talk about all the specifics, I came out to live with my dad when I was 15, and he was in the Air Force. And he eventually got the job as commander of Myrtle Beach Air Force Base, and then became the first city manager of Myrtle Beach when they had the manager council form of government. He worked under Mayor Hirsch and then under Bob Grissom. They were really good friends. And I went to the Citadel, so I graduated as a second lieutenant, and I went straight into medical school with a medical scholarship from the Air Force. And after that, I wanted to do surgery, and I went through 7 years of surgery training. After medical school, I went to medical school in Charleston. So I was actually in Charleston for 8 years, 4 at the Citadel and 4 at the Medical University. And I wanted to do plastic surgery because I'm kind of not a pill person. And I like to do things with my hands. And I figured plastic surgery was a good specialty to do that with. And plus, at the time, it was the longest training program of any specialty, including neurosurgery and heart surgery. So I was a glutton for punishment, and I wanted to stay in training for a long time, and that's what I did. And then I went off to Germany to do some stuff for the Air Force, and I was the chief of plastic surgery there. I also flew some jets with some friends of mine that basically got me into that sort of stuff, because everybody in Europe wanted plastic surgery, and I was the first plastic surgeon ever assigned to the European theater. I was the first plastic surgeon ever assigned to the European theater, both in all branches of service. So I was the first one ever over there, and it was a fantastic assignment. And I really enjoyed myself for 4 years, and then I came back to Myrtle Beach because my dad was well-known in Myrtle Beach, and I figured that would be a good time to start a practice because everybody knew my dad, so hopefully they would know me. And it went on from there.
Awesome. Well, I know that when I came in for my consultation, I was like, okay, I have no idea at all what to expect, because I had like one friend that I talked to about her experience, which she had, you know, her surgery done in a different state. So I just didn't really know what to expect. So now I know, but what can you tell people? Because after people knew that I was having the surgery, there was a lot of questions from women around me. So what should people expect when they come into your office to talk to you about some type of plastic surgery?
Well, they're going to be screened. And the first thing they do is they come in, and when we speak plastic surgery, we're speaking cosmetic. Because there's two types of plastic surgery that plastic surgeons do. One is reconstructive, which also includes hand surgery, all plastic surgeons are trained in hand surgery. So, and a lot of people don't know that. And the other reconstructive part of it is wounds and trauma and breast reconstruction after breast cancer. But what you're talking about is cosmetic surgery, which many, many plastic surgeons graduate to over the years because they get more experience with it. And it doesn't require the call that you are assigned to with hospitals, which when you're getting up in the middle of the night and taking care of patients, then you got a full schedule the next day. So as you get older, you tend to kind of gravitate to cosmetic surgery. And and that's actually taking care of somebody that's normal and you're trying to make them a little bit better than normal, so to speak, if that's a good way to put it.
Like that.
And So when they come in, they get screened by the patient care coordinator, and then we take their medical history and all that sort of stuff. And then the doctor comes in, which is me, and then I usually try to get to know them on a personal basis. I might ask some personal questions, and the purpose of that is not to pry into their personal life. It's to get comfortable with them and also to kind of evaluate them psychologically. To see if they're prepared, because, a lot of people say plastic surgeons have to be psychologists or psychiatrists, and they have to know the patient in 45 minutes and then do a 6 or 7 hour procedure on them. So that's a real huge trust factor. And you really have to know them psychologically to see if they're prepared both before, during, and after the surgery. So I get to know them and we go over and we do an exam, we take photographs and you can imagine the patient, she comes in to see somebody, she's never, known this person ever. And they're taking their clothes off if it's a breast or abdomen or something, or even a butt, they're taking their clothes off to show the plastic surgeon and they've never known this person before. So that's a huge, huge, issue that we take very personally, and we honor that, and we honor the trust that they have in us. So basically it's a pretty thorough exam. The PCC does a lot of it. The patient care coordinator, who in our case is Tori, and takes care of a lot of it for me, and then gives me some of the specifics on the patient before I come in, and then I get those when I see the patient.
Yeah. And I can say, like, I'm a pretty open gal. Like, I've been showbiz for a long time. And I was still like, oh, gosh, this is so weird. And Tori, she's a rock star. She did make me feel super comfortable. And I guess she's the one that says to you, like, Dr. White, this one's crazy. She's batshit.
Well, that's funny you should mention that. They do say patients seem to be crazy, but I think I'm kind of crazy because they might come out of the room and say, this one's really crazy, you probably shouldn't operate on them. And I walk out of the room saying, there's nothing wrong with that patient, they're perfectly fine. So that means I'm crazy too. And think about it, we're all crazy.
Yeah.
there's different elements of crazy, there's different percentages. It's just, you don't want to operate on the patient that's crazy over 50%. If you try to keep that 50% and less, then you're good to go. I mean, if I didn't operate on crazy patients, I wouldn't be able to run a 15,000 square foot surgery center that I do with 18 employees.
That's right. I'm sure.
I have 17 women and one guy, and the guy's here just to balance things out because I got to deal with 17 women day in and day out, which makes me even more
crazy. I can certainly understand that.
So, God bless you. That's exactly what they say. They say, you watch out for this one, and then I get in there and I feel perfectly comfortable with them. So
I'm feeling like, I don't need a breast enhancement, but I'm feeling like I should do something because I'm crazy. Like now I feel like I need to see you for something.
Well, you probably are crazy, and that's what keeps me in business, and God bless you for it, because vanity is a big thing. It's all, as long as it's treated with good common sense and it's not pathologic, and we can get into that a little bit later. But that's what the plastic surgeon has to do in a 30 to 45 minute period, is weed out what's pathologic and what's not.
Well, that is a question I do have for you, Dr. White. Have you had to say no to some people because psychologically it's just not right for them?
Well, I give everybody a chance, and not everybody. I do say no to some people. And the people that I would say no to would be the person that's coming in and saying that I'm doing this breast augmentation for my boyfriend or my husband. Well, that right away tells me I will not operate on that person because they don't know their own identity. And as soon as something happens, maybe a mishap in the sense that they've got too much swelling or the implants are not exactly in the right place for whatever reason, because of their anatomy, whatever, they really get a hard time from their significant other, so to speak. So they have to tell me that they are doing the surgery for themselves. And quite honestly, in the last several years, that's been the answer. And I've been really pleased about that. So people, women in particular, getting the breast augmentation are saying that answer. And it makes me feel good that they do know their own identity, which is really nice. So maybe that's the change of the times and they're not held to their significant other. Other things are if you can find a patient that's OCD, got to be really, really careful of those patients because if they're not treated, and many of them are, they still have problems and they will drive you crazy after surgery. And you have to handhold them. You have to try to convince them. But as you know, an OCD patient, a lot of times you can talk to them, but they won't necessarily listen to you 100% and they'll still go back to their issue of what their pathology is. And so those patients you got to be really wary of. And a lot of those I won't operate on. The patient that comes in that's chronically depressed and they're not over their depression is a significant finding. Their depression is not from their body form, so to speak. It's from other things that are probably stem from childhood, their relationship, whatever. And they're not going to do well postoperatively. I can give you an example. If you all want to hear this, on a facelift patient I had.
Oh, yeah.
She came in, and for an entire year, I put off her surgery because her husband had died, and she was very depressed about that. And I said, well, I think the best thing for you to do is get over your depression, you know, with your husband. Try to get treated for that and feel better about yourself and move on. And I went over this for at least a year. She must have come back 3 or 4 times. And finally, persisted on it, on getting me to operate on it, and I operated on it on her, and the surgery was flawless, and it went great. And you could see 6 weeks, she looked fantastic. The befores and afters were really obsessive about taking pictures because a lot of times patients forget what they used to look like before their surgery, and she was looking fantastic. Yet she was unhappy with everything. And I couldn't say anything or do anything or convince her in any shape, way, or form to tell her, even with showing her post-op photographs, that she was better. It was dramatic how much better she looked. And it was because of her depression. And finally, on her last visit, I suspected that she was still angry. So I was training a surgeon in cosmetic surgery at the time, and he was with me, and I called him into a room where she was, and my mistake was her chair was near the entrance door. And when I walked in, I walked to the back of the room and I was talking to her and she was complaining. I was showing her the photograph. And finally I said, you know, I can't do anything to make you happy. I feel like you've had a fantastic operation and I just have to end this conversation and we're going to stop here. So on my way out, she attacked me.
Oh, snap.
She started beating me. Beating me in the back. And the poor cosmetic surgeon that was training under me, his eyes were as big as saucers. And she had a pretty good wallop. Well, you know, you don't turn around and hit your patient back, even though you're trying to defend yourself, because besides, if you hit her, you're going to hit her in the face, and she's had a facelift, and you don't want to ruin your work. So I just escaped out of the room.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And he got out of there, and then we got her to leave the office. I called the police, filed a report, and I never saw her again. And that was because she never, ever got over depression. So that's an interesting one.
Let me just ask Rachel a question on this, because getting to your prior point, Doctor, but Rachel, what, tell us a little bit about your motivations for this and how did it play into getting this going?
Okay. Well, I've been a performer my whole life, and my body has been my tool my whole life, and I've had my problems with my body image and gotten through all of that, and pretty much was at a point where I was happy with my body. Yes, for sure. And I had a discussion with my husband for probably about a year about it, because he knows Dr. White. My husband knows Dr. White from just various events and charities and what have you. And we started talking about it, and he asked me, did I want to have it done? Because he was all for it. And it was something, as a dancer and performer, there's sort of one half gals that have it done in my line of work because of obvious reasons that, you know, that's kind of an image that the silhouette that is desirable. And then the other side to it in some of the shows that I've been in is that some of the girls get their boobs done and then it makes it tricky to fit into the costumes when they send them from corporate and all this stuff. So I kind of just was, I have always toyed with the idea because I just didn't have a very large bust at all. And then it was a matter of being in a position of being able to do it. And so we talked about it for a while and I was like, I don't know, this and that. And then one day I was actually watching, this is legit the truth. I was watching the new release of the Pussycat Dolls Return Tour. And I was like looking at the lead singer and I'm like, she looks freaking good. I'm totally on it. I'm doing this. Let's do it. Cause she looks good. And I want to just feel even better about myself. And I freaking love the work that's been done. And I know there's probably people out there that are listeners that have been wondering if I had a little work done. Well, here the cat's out of the bag. And I think definitely to Dr. White's point, I don't think somebody should have this type of surgery done if they think that it's going to give them confidence. Like, it definitely, I feel confident of like, I walk around like, hey, now, but I think that somebody that thinks if they're psychologically in a position where they're just not confident, then they might have the surgery done and then still not feel good about themselves.
But you already had the confidence. I mean, and I remember from a very early podcast, one of your boob stories, which was flashing everybody in the rafters during a performance, right?
So that's right. I didn't have bad boobs. Dr. White can tell you that my boobs are not bad beforehand. They just were not as full as they are now.
Well, that's great. So if I may, Dr. White, let me ask you this question. It seems that the attitude toward a boob job has really shifted over the last, I don't know, decade or so, from kind of having it done but not talking about it to having it done and having
here
it
we are.
And having it having it out there from the patient's perspective.
Yeah, it has. And by the way, you are a fantastic entertainer dancer.
Thank you.
No, you really are, Rachel. I saw you at Legends. And, you know, Rob Cottle's a good friend of mine. He does the Rod Stewart thing. He invited me and you stood out among the crowd easily. And I just want to say that. So when you came into the office, I looked at you and I kind of, and then I realized it was you. So that's fantastic. You've got great, great talent. But getting back to what he said, I think people, which is the reason why you have these podcasts, women especially are coming out more and just really with good identity and telling people who they are, what they want. They're just owning their issues, which is really good. And that's why you've seen surgeons in cosmetic surgery even more so than before. Before this virus hit us, We were so busy. I mean, we were operating 3 and 4 days a week, all day, and so it's just a good testament that people are taking things on their own and getting what they want, and you know, in their own way, taking care of themselves. You know, they're not, I have a lot of people coming in and saying, well, it's time to take care of me. Now, maybe that's the Me Too movement. I'm privy to all that information that's come out, kind of in my own little microcosm here doing surgery, but maybe that's helped people really identify themselves. And they're saying, I want to do this for me. I've been taking my care of my kids, my husband for so long. This is for me. And it's really cool.
Yeah. I've got a friend of mine who just had her second child, and she's been really closely following my progress as I went through the surgery and recovery and everything. And that's exactly her position, is that she's a beautiful woman, but she has been taking care of her child, and she just had another child. And she's like, once I'm, you know, another year, once my baby is, you know, not nursing and all that stuff, she said, I'm going to take care of me because I want to be the hot mom and I want to be this and it, you know, for herself, and she'll be calling you. But it is, it's true. So I want to shift gears into any type of risks, because that's one question a lot of ladies asked me when they knew that I was doing this surgery. So my friends, the risks, there's something I think called implant sickness, maybe. Is what have you seen in terms of that? Is there risk that people should know about? I mean, obviously there's risk in all surgery, but what type of risks should people be concerned about, or should they at all be concerned?
Well, the risks depend on the area that you operate on, obviously. If you want to talk about breast augmentation, I used to be adamant about the fact that silicone does not cause disease. Even when the implant ruptured, I have an extensive experience on taking ruptured implants out back that I put in Germany when I was in the Air Force back in the 80s. And by the way, the reason I did cosmetic surgery in the Air Force back there, and it was all free, believe it or not, was because that they felt that I needed to continue my expertise in all areas of plastic surgery, not just trauma. So that's why I had so many patients back in Europe that flew from all different countries to come in, and I would get a huge auditorium together. And all I did, I would have 150 patients, and all I would do would be talk about complications in order to dissuade them from having the surgery. And it really didn't dissuade hardly any. They still wanted it. And I showed the most horrible things that could happen, you know, the botched surgery and stuff like that. So anyway, talking about today, I can't tell you if there's anything to the silicone disease. I think a lot of people made money off treating patients for silicone disease, $750 office visits in various places early on. And what I can tell you is my own experience. And I can tell you, back when I saw the most horrible ruptures back in the early 90s, 1990, when I took those implants out and the capsules around them, the patients always wanted new implants. They did not. In other words, if their implants were ruptured, I've seen implant silicone disease in their lymph nodes. I've seen it in their muscle. I've seen it in various parts of their chest. They wanted me to scrape it out, take any lymph nodes out that were painful with silicone, and they wanted me to put the implants back in. They were adamant about that. And that was in the early 90s. And then as we approached the more modern implant industry, the implants are made much better. We started the studies in 2003. We were one of the centers who did 100 patients. And of all the implants I put in since 2003, I've never seen a ruptured implant that I put in except one patient. I couldn't believe she actually had a ruptured implant. I'm not sure why, but she had a ruptured implant and she wanted a new implants put back in. The rupture didn't hurt her or anything. But interestingly, in the last year, I've had patients come in and say, well, I'm losing weight, I'm losing my hair, I'm got chronic fatigue. I just don't feel well. I feel like arthritis is coming on. I've got a rash on my face like lupus. I want my implants out. What do you think? And I say, well, I'm much more liberal about taking their implants out now. And I will tell them now, I say, well, you know, I can't tell you that the implants cause those problems, but I'm happy to take your implants out. And I've had four patients in the last 6 months with those symptoms. One patient had ruptured implants, and it was clear on MRI and also on mammogram. And so I took the patients back to surgery. None of them wanted implants put back in. So all I did was take them out en bloc. And if you don't know what that means going in and taking the capsule out around the implant with the implant, with the capsule. And because every time someone gets an implant put in their chest, they get scar tissue around the implant. It's a foreign body, and it's called a capsule. If the capsule is thin and malleable, then they have a soft breast. Sometimes it's thick, and they have a hard breast, and that's called a capsular contracture. Well, all these four patients, I took all their implants out. They did not want new implants in. One patient had ruptured implants, and they came back to see me, and every single one of them got better. Everything. Now, I'm talking about three patients that had normal implants and a normal chest. Every single one of them got better. So I'm saying, hallelujah. You know, I don't know whether this is psychological or there's some disease from maybe microscopic droplets of the silicone causing these problems. They're extra sensitive. But if they were extra sensitive, they did not show it in their chest. In other words, their chest was normal. The capsule, the pockets were all normal. There were no tumors or anything. So I'm pretty liberal, so to speak, or compliant in taking patients out, implants out, if they want them out. If they want them out, they can have them out. And if they're willing to accept the deformity that they may or may not have after you take the implants out.
So, Rachel, you raised a question, and along the line of risks, but maybe just how things progress about, you know, your friend who's had children. What, Dr. White, what is it from a woman's perspective, to, you know, if they have implants early and then later have children, go through lactation and so forth, is, you know, what are the any complications there or changes that have to be taken into account?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, they certainly can breastfeed if they have implants in. And if they breastfeed, by definition, they're probably introducing bacteria from the baby's mouth into their ducts, and it may seed the implant. We know that if you get bacteria that invades the capsule around the implant, your breast will either, it could become red, which is rare, and they have to be treated for mastitis, which is inflammation of the breast, or it could cause the implant to recognize, or the body to recognize the implant as a real foreign body, and it forms a capsule around the implant. It gets hard. That's called a capsular contracture. So we know breastfeeding could cause that. But aside from that, you can breastfeed after you have an augmentation, but also you know that your breasts are going to get larger, and you could have all kinds of shapes of your breast after they end up finish breastfeeding the child, and the child gets a little bit older. They may have a ptosis deformity or a drooping deformity of the breast, or the breast tissue may retract just nicely, and they end up looking pretty good. But I have to say that's probably in the minority, that they probably will want an additional operation later on to fix any kind of droopiness of their breast after they've had children.
So you see repeat clients, if you will, before and then after childbearing?
Well, I see patients the rest of their life if I put implants in them. And we don't, of course, charge them when they come back because I just want to know how they're doing. And about 10 to 15% abide by that.
So I know Keith had some questions about deciding what size you put in. And I know when I came in to see you, I didn't want it to be so super obvious. I mean, it is obvious for people that know me that know that I didn't have a large bust before, that I have obviously had some changes, but everyone that has taken a look at me, they're like, oh yeah, it totally looks natural. It's not like way over the top. I know some people probably come in and they're like, they want big, giant, like over the top for whatever reasons. But do you allow the patient to decide? Do you look and help decide? I know I kind of went with your guidance.
Yeah, it kind of depends on their anatomy. If someone is an A-minus cup and they want to be a triple D and they weigh 105 pounds, they're not going to get that. that's, you know, to try to get, put a huge implant in them is basically malpractice, and I won't do it. But, you know, someone with that kind of body habitus is going to look good with a full B cup, and they're going to look fantastic. If you're medium boned and medium body, then, you know, you could probably go to a full C or low D, which is the most common requested size. And it, I just kind of listen to them. And if they say they want to be a double D, I say, you know, I can't give you any guarantees because your pocket may not handle a large, real large implant. Then, you know, they're usually, well, you do what you think is best, doctor, sort of deal. And I do. And generally, they're really, really happy. Probably about 30 or 40% of the patients that I do, and at the end of 3 months, they wish they were bigger. But they go into the operating room saying, please don't make me too big. I don't want to look like Dolly Parton. And they always say that to me. And I said, don't worry, I won't. And they really stress that because they're worried with majority consciousness about it, what other people think about them. And I say, don't worry about them. Don't worry about what other people think. Do you have Mary Jo, who you know over for dinner all the time? Is she a close friend? No. Then what do you care about what she thinks? You should care about what you think. And we kind of go along that philosophy. So I really want them to center on their own self and not worry about what other people think, but yet there's just so much I can do. And if she wants to be a full D, which I call a D plus, and I'll try to get them there. A double D is tough. And quite honestly, the size of breast is going down. In the early 2000s, late 90s, 1900s, it was a large size everybody wanted, but it's gone down to a more realistic size, like a C or full C cup, low D range. And there's different sizes of implants that will get them there depending on what their anatomy is.
Rachel, what did you get?
I got a full C, which interestingly, the full C, when I went to Victoria's Secret to get a bra, because obviously I had to buy all new bras. And there, I actually wear a D cup for their bras. But, you know, depending on, sometimes you go to Abercrombie and Fitch and you're like a 12, but you go somewhere else and you're a zero. So it's just different, but I definitely have a full C.
And what, and where were you before?
I was like an A, I think.
Okay. So A to C.
Mm-hmm.
They look amazing.
Thanks.
Well, you're welcome. And you you're the patient someone wants to operate on because you have no body issues really. I mean, you're a dancer. I mean, and in a good way. So not that there's bad dancers, but I mean, you're a professional entertainer with a theater group is what I'm trying to say. I almost got myself into something there. But I take care of everybody. Yeah, I take care of everybody. And I think they're all professional and they're all wonderful. And I get along with everybody. And I don't care what they do. I don't judge. I just do. I even operate on males and who are transgender.
Oh, interesting!
And do that sort of thing. I don't let my personal biases affect what I do on people. And some of those people are the greatest and nicest people you could meet, and great patients. So, you know, you got to give everybody a chance. You got to listen to them and see what their desires are. But you know, Rachel was a fantastic patient to operate on. They're not as easy as she is. And, you know, there's two avenues we do breast augmentation. There's one over the muscle, one underneath the muscle. And I'll vary that depending on what their desires are, how much pain they're willing to accept after surgery, and what's going to look best on them.
So Doctor, you're talking about your patients from a breast augmentation perspective. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the age range of your patients, how young, how old, and where do most of your patients fall into this cosmetic breast augmentation?
Well, again, that's a fantastic question. The breast augmentation patient with implants, because there's other ways to augment a breast, but with implants, it's ranges from 18 to probably about 45 on the average. Now, I have done a lady that was 78. And the reason I did her was because she was married in a miserable relationship for like 45 years. And finally, when her husband died, she went out and got her breast aug, which she had always wanted to do, but he wouldn't let her do it. And she was as happy as could be. And she went right over to Bad Kitty and to get an outfit after her breast augmentation. So she was a fantastic patient.
Yes. That's great.
But, it was, in fact, she even brought the outfit to the office and then wore it for us. I mean, this is why it's fun to be in plastic surgery, because we have so much fun over here, and you know, patients are just so much fun, you know.
We need to get her on the show.
Well, it's been a while, so I hope she's still alive, but she was fantastic. This was probably 10 years ago at least.
Where do most of your patients, what age group are most of those patients in for the breast augmentation?
Well, most of them are, you know, probably early 20s. And then the ones that are a little bit older always wish, you know, I wish I had done this earlier. Because think about it, you know, you're 21, you want to go to the beach, you've got an A cup. And, you know, they're self-conscious about that. And so you get a breast augmentation, all of a sudden they're in the triangle bikini and they look fantastic. So, but when they come in when they're 30, they've missed all those beach days, so to speak. And then they really live in their life and they're very happy and they say they wish they had done it earlier. I just want to stress, though, when you have surgery, at least at my surgery center, it's important for you to follow up because I need to keep an eye on you. We don't charge you for coming in. I'm very impressed with the patient that comes in. She's 10 years out from her breast augmentation. I walk into the room and I said, how are you doing? You have any problems? No. I said, then why are you here? She says, you told me to follow up. And I said, fantastic. You know, and then they go on their way, check them out, make sure they don't have nodules. Cause you know, breast cancer, attacks people 1 out of 8. People. So I think about it. I have 18 women that work for me. You know, chances are 2 of them are going to get breast cancer, and it has nothing to do with breast implants. It's just that it's good to check these people out, because one other thing is if you have implants, and I know I'm skipping around a little bit, but I think this is important. If you have breast implants, you're able to examine your breast easier than if you didn't.
Interesting. I was wondering about that.
Because you're think about it. You're examining breast over a smooth platform versus examining over ribs that are knobby and things like that. And so you don't know exactly what a lump is and not. So I do want to say one other thing that we've been doing a lot in the last year is fat grafting to the breast. So say a patient comes in, she's a low B, she wants to be a full B, doesn't want a foreign body in her body, so to speak. So we take fat from them, and we put it in their breast, and that's working out fantastic. If they have enough fat on their body. And your next question might be, well, where are you getting the fat from? We're getting it from the flanks, which gives them a waist. We're getting it from the back. We're getting it from the arms. We're getting it from the medial thighs, places like that where we put it in the breast. And also we're doing breast implants where we fat graft to the top of the breast to give them that fullness up top. Because if they have a tendency to droop, even with implants, you can circumvent that with fat grafting to the top of the breast.
So that's the other type other than an implant that you mentioned before.
Correct. But that has its limitation. You think putting a breast implant in somebody and bam, you get a result right away. Fat grafting, you get a result right away, but you're going to lose 20% of it in the next 3 to 4 weeks, even in the best of hands. But we have a machine specifically dedicated to fat grafting patients. It's phenomenal. And it's a closed system where the fat goes into one canister, it comes back out through a tube back into the patient's body, so it never sees any air. So there's no possible way of contamination or anything like that. It's working fantastic.
And Rachel, you went into this with some expectations and then it happened. So tell us a little bit about your recovery seemed to be a little bit harder than you thought it would be. So I'm curious about how this met your expectations, both from the physical aspect of it, but also just from the personal vanity aspect of it as well.
Right. Well, I was about to say a second ago in response to what Dr. White said about going to the beach, I was having like a rough day yesterday, but my new bikini came in the mail and I put it on last night. My day got good. All of a sudden I was like, yes.
You should be wearing it for the show. What is it?
Really should.
I can't wait till we get out of time out from this coronavirus so that I can, you know, the summer's coming and I can show these things off. Well, definitely I went into the process knowing that, you know, there is recovery involved. I've had some gnarly surgeries in the past. I had my abdominal surgery that was a pretty hard recovery. So I figured if it's not worse than that, I'm good. And then I was happy that Dr. White advised that we would go over the muscle instead of under, because I'm pretty fit and I was concerned about how that would affect my very strong muscular frame if we went under the muscle. So we went over the muscle. So that apparently is an easier recovery. And Tori and I discussed, I was like, well, how long before I can go back to work? And she said, well, if you do the surgery on Thursday, which I did mine on Thursday, you should be good to go, like go back to work on Monday. So, and I guess, you know, that was from a pain factor, because the pain factor definitely was fine, but I haven't touched alcohol or any type of sedative I had sedatives during my surgery, but on my abdomen, but I don't touch anything or alcohol or anything. So the recovery with the medications was what I think threw me for such a loop, because I tried to go back to work on Monday and I was like, whoa, I can't take a pain pill and even close try to concentrate on my work at all. So it was definitely a little bit longer for me to feel fully recovered, but I don't think it was really from a pain aspect, because, you know, they describe, okay, just take this, you know, time it out, make sure you take, you know, so that you don't end up in pain. And I'm pretty compliant when it comes to that stuff. So,
And what about your psychological expectations, your mental expectations? And
my headspace? At first, when I had over the weekend and maybe the first week, there was a lot of swelling involved, and I was kind of like, oh my God, they're so big. I'm not sure that I don't know about this at first. But of course that goes down, and now it really is like they're just part of my body now. And I here's a funny story. I walked in and I was in my pajamas. Roxy was in the bath the other day, and I walked in and I was kind of like giving myself a squeeze, and she's like, why are you feeling your boobs? And I'm like, I'm just, they're fun. They're great. They're amazing, aren't they? And she's like, oh my God. So from, but I definitely, I will say, I feel like I have a little more swagger. Like, I mean, even when I walk the dog, I'm like, yeah, hey, like, I mean, it's exactly what I was hoping for. I guess because I'm 44 and, you know, as Dr. White mentioned, a lot of the gals do it when they're a little younger. So I was concerned, would I feel regret? Would I look at myself and think, oh, why did I do this? And absolutely 100% nope. I am super glad that I did it. I didn't have any type of complications. And I'm super happy. And my husband's pretty happy too. I ask him periodically, I'm like, are you glad that I did this? And he's like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's terrific.
Do you have before and after pictures that we can, not maybe now, but maybe later we can show when we release this episode?
I do. I did take some. I know Dr. White, they take photographs without any clothing. And those ones I probably wouldn't share. The strangest
photo.
You can
still share them with me and Keith.
You can still share those.
The strangest photo shoot I've ever done was like going to. But I did take photos of myself in my bra before and after, for sure. And I'm happy to share that. And you can see it's not, it is dramatic on one level, but not dramatic on another. Like, it's just because that's what I was going for, is the natural look.
Well, I have another question for you, Rachel. How has this, if at all, impacted your business and how you do your work and how people, you know, look at you? Like, has there been any kind of negative pushback? You know, because some women, people in general, can be catty.
I haven't had any negative pushback. I think that it's not so much anybody noticing anything different aside from the fact that I have a little more swagger and I'll just a touch more confidence, because it's like in the episode that we spoke to Camellia, you know, my superhero cape, you know, when you talk about put on your superhero cape and go out and do your best work and be your best self, suddenly I just have that little extra superpower. In my opinion.
Maybe that explains my swagger sometimes.
It's always there.
Because I'm pushing forward with double D's.
Right? Well, Dr. White, would you consider your patient base to be women your mother warned you about overall?
You bet. Absolutely. And that's why I got to be real careful, because my mother was usually right. But again, these women are a little crazy. They're a little dramatic. But I still operate on them because I think I'm probably a little crazy and maybe a little dramatic too sometimes. So I fit right in with all these 18 women that work for me. But sometimes I do hide in the office somewhere at the surgery center away from them. But, you know, like Rachel, you're the perfect patient to take care of. I mean, you had everything. You had the surgery done and everything happened with you, which we would desire as from a plastic surgery standpoint. So with you, it was a huge success. And that's why this podcast is so neat, because I'm so busy. I don't get involved in listening to all this and what they, you know, I don't have time to listen to how it has affected their life. I know they're happy and stuff, but this has been really great to really see how it's hit home with you. And so I'm just really, really happy. Yay. About that.
Rachel, what, you know, for the women and men who are listening, but the women who are listening, if you had to sum up your experience just real quickly, how would you sum it up and what would you recommend?
I would sum it up in that I was a little bit nervous. And when I arrived at the office, Dr. White's staff is so friendly, so helpful. A lot of the staff have had augmentations, so they can actually speak on a level of experience rather than recommendation. So I was completely comfortable. The scenario, and I wanted to describe really quickly the scenario with the consult, the moment of like I'm sitting in there and disrobe to have Dr. White examine my breast prior to surgery, there were a couple other women in the room. So it wasn't like it was uncomfortable in a way of I've never done that before, aside from in front of all those Teamsters, as you mentioned, Keith, but it was comfortable because it was very professional. And I felt very comfortable. I felt cared for. And it was just a really friendly situation. And Dr. White is obviously super knowledgeable. He's a friendly guy. He's a nice guy. And I could tell that he wanted the best for me, rather than just, you know, just going through the motions and taking my money. He wanted the best for me and what I wanted. So I feel good about it. They were really great about following up, his staff, to make sure I was doing okay. But I think if you're thinking about it, then you should go and have a consult. Now, I know there's a fee that they obviously will take for the consult that people should know, because I'm sure Dr. White is super busy and he doesn't want people just coming in there for no reason if they don't have at least some level of seriousness. And so that fee that they take at the front end, that is applied towards your surgery costs. So it's not wasted. Let's just make sure Dr. White's not wasting his time. But it's worth it to go in and talk about it and see what the options are. For sure.
And Dr. White, there's a broader audience here than just the Myrtle Beach. And so what do you recommend to women who are looking at this? They're not coming to your office. What do they need to look for in a plastic surgeon when they're thinking about this? What advice would you give women in general?
Well, again, that's a great question. We were talking about that with my staff at a staff meeting yesterday. And I actually did a survey on a patient over the weekend, asking her all kinds of questions about things like that. And I said, what age would age matter in your plastic surgeon? And she said, no, not at all. And I asked one of my staff members and they said, yes. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, I wouldn't want to be operated on somebody right out of training. So I thought it would be the other way. And she wouldn't want to operate on an old man like me, but I'd be operated on by an old man like me. She said, I don't want to be operated on somebody who's 33, which I thought was interesting because a lot of plastic surgeons are well-trained when they finish their training and they can do the surgery. So, besides age being a factor one way or the other, you want to go to a plastic surgeon that is certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery for sure. And then you want to, when you come into the room and meet him or her, you want to feel comfortable with them. I mean, quite frankly, a lot of doctors do not have personalities and they can't get on to the level with the patient. I've heard that so many times in other specialties too. And you want to feel comfortable with the person that you're with. And so that's another big factor in my view. You're going to look at cost. You know, a lot of people do look at cost, not as much in Beverly Hills, but in Myrtle Beach, they do. And I always say that in Beverly Hills, they think plastic surgery, and in Myrtle Beach, they think John Deere. So the plastic surgeons, there's, what, three or four here in a 200-mile beach distance. And in Beverly Hills, there's 50 plastic surgeons every two blocks and board certified, believe it or not. Wow. I mean, so California, Miami thinks plastic surgery. Myrtle Beach thinks other things. And so that's why there's not that many here. But you want to feel comfortable with your plastic surgeon. They have to be certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery. It's nice for them to belong to the American Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgery and the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. And things like that. So, and in the final, you might want to say, okay, can I look at your pictures? And you say, well, also, are these your pictures? Not what you got out of a book or borrowed from somebody else. Are these your pictures? And that's important too, because that shows their experience. And then you go over the risks and complications. And if they don't want to tell you the complications, that's a red flag too. So they need to tell you the complications. And the number one complication is death. There have been people that have died from plastic surgery. A lot of them have been fat grafting to the butt, but some have died from breast augmentation. Some have died from tummy tucks, whatnot. I personally am happy to say that I've never lost a patient from cosmetic surgery, but I have lost patients to gunshot wounds and things like that, which I, you know, could not save, unfortunately. So those are the kind of things you want to know about your plastic surgeon. Again, if you don't have a good feeling, then don't go to that person and go to another one, because you can go to several people. You might have to travel a little bit, but it's at least it'll make you feel comfortable about who's taking care of you and who's doing an operation that is a serious operation. These are not to be taken lightly, any of these procedures.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Before we wrap it up, Rachel, I have one more question for you. You started to hit on this a little bit about your swagger, your confidence has changed. How has that, or have you seen an effect from that in your business and how you do business, and does it help you generate more business? I mean, I know it's not easy to measure that, but have you seen a difference?
I think that, as I mentioned, I just feel a little bit more confident about, I feel a little more confident about the silhouette of how I look. And so when I get onto a sales call, which I spend a lot of my time calling people, there's just that one extra bit of, hey, I got it. And I think that comes through in my voice and in my attitude when I speak to people. Definitely.
Awesome.
And so, hey, business is good for me right now. So possibly.
Every bit of confidence just helps. And, you know, Dr. Yeah. White mentioned owning it. Every bit of confidence and owning who you are just helps every day in business.
Yeah, exactly. When you're feeling good, you're making things happen no matter what.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Dr. White, one quick little list of signature questions we have. How would you define the word sexy?
I think it's sexy. Okay, I think it's sexy for a woman to take care of her body. And what that means is I feel that people should be in a gym or a home gym or something 6 days a week. I do it. I get up at 4:30 every morning. I go to the gym. And I've got 12 hours ahead of work for me. And so I don't listen to people's excuses because I always come back with my own experience. But I think sexy is taking care of your body, not smoking, and just having a good attitude. Because if you have a good body like Rachel does, you're going to have a good attitude. And that's why she's so up about everything. And it's just really fun to see.
Amen.
That.
Thank you. Well, and there's so many psychological benefits to exercise too, that people don't realize. So it's just a win-win for exercise. What is the best advice you've ever been given, Dr. White?
Yeah, probably, when I first started in Myrtle Beach, I had a lot of experience with the military and I was trying to cover everything. I covered 3 hospitals and then I did my own surgery center. And one day I just kind of looked depressed, and a friend of mine who was Dr. Poland, he was a general surgeon, very busy at Grand Strand Regional Medical Center. He came up to me and he was a close friend. In fact, he's my oldest daughter is a model in New York. That's her grandfather, godfather. Anyway, he says, Steve, you cannot make 100% of the people happy 100% of the time. And that stuck with me. And I've never forgotten it. It's really true.
Awesome. Last question. Any advice that you wish you had been given?
Yeah, to listen more and not open my big trap and interrupt people and things like that. When I was at the Citadel as a freshman, I was kind of a smart ass. And I got my ass beat for 9 months because of that. And, I just bring it on myself. So the main thing is to listen and listen to people. Like listening to you today has been great, and just wait till your time to speak, and it's you carry more power with that.
Excellent. Anything else, Gina, Keith?
No, this has been awesome having you on the show, Dr. White. If people want to connect with you, learn more about you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Probably contacting Tori, the patient care coordinator. She's wonderful on the phone, and she's also the director of surgical services, so she has 2 hats. And her number is 843-448-9977. That's the surgery center's number. But she's also, her email is Tori at, it's a long one, CarolinaCoastalPlasticSurgery.com. So CarolinaCoastalPlasticSurgery.com. And that's our business name, Carolina Coastal Plastic Surgery and Medical Spa.
And that would be the website that people could go to?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And that's how to get a hold of her. Yeah. And we also have a website. If you go to www.figuresandfaces.com, it'll direct you over to Carolina Coastal Plastic Surgery. It'll automatically send you, and then you can, go on the little menu thing and make an appointment, or you can call Tori directly and she'll return your call and tell you about
things. Tori's the best.
She is.
This has been so informative.
Thank you so much for taking
I've enjoyed
the time.
It. You guys have been great. I hope I maybe help some people out there.
Well, it was definitely really educational information. So thank you. Thank you so much. We know how busy you are. So thank you for your time today, Dr. White.
Thanks for having me, y'all.
I always love talking about boobs.
Thanks to all of our Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. To connect with me, Gina Tremarco, directly, you can do that on our website at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com and find out about Pivot 10 results and Carolina Improv, or you can go to ginatremarco.com. And for Rachel?
To connect with me, you can find me all over social media as The Singing Lender, and you can find me at thesinginglender.com and find all of our social media links and free downloads on our website at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
And what about Keith?
Well,
it's so nice to have him here.
Oh, it's so wonderful to be here talking about boobs. and to reach me, you can reach me via one of my vast social media contacts. Probably the easiest one, though, is just to go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. Find my profile, and you'll find my LinkedIn that way.
Will we find your Facebook there? I'm just curious.
That and MySpace as well.
Awesome. And hey, listeners, if you love our show, show the love and share our show with a friend. Pass that on. Just one way you can give value of a free resource like this to your friends and colleagues. Keep on keeping it sexy. And remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, Warners.
Bye, Warners.
Bye, Keith.
Bye, Gina. Bye, Rachel. Thanks for bringing your boobs today.
My pleasure, indeed.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof. Monkey, monkey.